We are Ingrid and Hara, founders of NoCo.
This is a series of podcasts, Business of Collaboration, a conversation with a professor and a business executive.
Once per month, we interview a professor and a business on how to work together to find a common understanding and inspiration.
So subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and on our website noco.net. Join us in our journey. Today, we're here in Barcelona with Aldo de Jong, co-founder of Claro Partners and co-founder of Startup Bootcamp in Barcelona for IoT and data tech. He is also an advisory board member on strategy for Denuba, the digital payment network. And we're here with Cyril Maury, managing director on strategy and innovation of Claro Partners in Barcelona, and also a mentor at Startup Bootcamp. We will talk about insight-driven innovation, how to make collaborations with startups, and how to successfully integrate startups into corporates.
So I think I met you, Aldo, 7 years ago in the ISPIN conference here in Barcelona when I was still working at Adidas as an IT innovation manager. And I was fascinated by Claro Partners on their way of doing innovation based on ethnography. So to you both, what is innovation for you?
So for me, innovation is when you create something new, which is of value to the customer. So it always has to be about the value for the customer and whether the technology to deliver that value is new or not is less of importance for me. It's more important whether the value that you're providing to the customer is new.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think there is a common misconception with innovation is that people think that innovation is necessarily something that is completely different. I think that novelty is more that. Novelty is something that is, you know, like refreshing, different from what used to be done. I think innovation is really centered, as Aldo said, on the customer, the people, and it's really being able to enable people to do things that they were not able to do as easily or as in such an easy fashion or not able to do at all in the past. So it's really like giving more power to people, enable them to do new things, like to create new value for them.
Learning what the user needs.
Mm.
So then at Claro Partners, how are you helping companies to be innovative and to be ahead of the game with this philosophy in innovation?
So the way we help companies to innovate is by helping them understand how the world is changing. So how the world is changing from a human behavior point of view, how technology is creating new offers and how that then also influences this human behavior. And because the pace of change of these new products that are being introduced, this new experience that people can have is very high, this behavior is changing quite quickly as well. So you really need to, as a company, if you want to be successful in innovation, you need to be continuously on the pulse of what's happening in society, what's happening with technology, with new business models. And we call this insight-driven innovation. So we don't just say human-centered or user-centered innovation, because we believe that insights are not only about the human behavior, the needs, their attitudes, their sort of feelings, but that it's also really about what insights you can get from understanding the market, from what startups are experimenting with. Because if you cross those two, the understanding of the people with the understanding of these new business models, then you can see where the gaps are. But also you can see which of those startups are actually going anywhere. Because unfortunately, the success rate of startups is crazy low. Like 0.2% of startups are actually successful. So that's why I also wrote a blog post which has the title, "Are you sure you want to innovate like a startup?" Yeah, because a lot of large companies, they have lost the confidence that they can innovate. And they think that what startups are doing is very exciting, and they think that they should behave like a startup. But if you look at the success rate, that doesn't seem like such a good idea, because the successful startups are so rare that, but that's the only one that the big companies know about, right? They know, of course, everybody would love to be the new Google, Facebook, whatever, but very few startups will actually end up in that space. So we don't think that looking at startups is the right way to find out how to innovate.
Yeah, I think that makes absolute sense. I think there is this absolute like survivor's fallacy, which everyone is falling into, which is you're looking at only the last successful ones, so the ones that are able to tell you, well, look, I made a successful product. And so this is why one of the things that we're trying to do is we're trying, in a sense, to help large companies have the best of both worlds and not the worst of both worlds. And unfortunately, what we're saying by talking to large corporates is that most of the times, unfortunately, they end up with the worst of both worlds. So they, in a sense, keep all the inefficiencies of their large corporations, slow decision process, a culture which is a culture of keeping doing the same things, of not trying out, of being afraid of failure. They keep that, and they mix that with what doesn't work very well in startups as well. So what we're trying to do, one of the things we're trying to do to help corporate companies is, how can you create an environment? And so by environment, I mean processes, I mean culture, I mean way of working, which would allow for this collaboration to flourish. It seems easy on paper, it's extremely hard in practice. And so that is one of the things that we're trying to do, really helping these companies leverage these startup ecosystems, find ways to work with them in a very profitable way for all of the stakeholders of that ecosystem.
And this becomes very tangible, right? It's about saying, okay, what are the different opportunities that a large company has to create new value for their customers? And then seeing which startups potentially have the right capabilities to deliver part of the solution, and then creating a collaboration between the startup and the large company, and accompanying them with our Claro toolkit to help them really make that collaboration successful.
Yes, okay.
And already you can see the first successes of that in the market. Only 9 months after the startup and the large company met for the first time, they already have launched a really innovative new product to the market.
Yeah, because this was my question to you as well. How do you transfer the technology from the startup to the company? Because it's a very critical point, like you are saying, and you said 9 months you can do it. So what is the trick, the process you have?
Well, I think there's no silver bullet in a sense, and I would say that transferring the technology is part of it, but I would say that you need to transfer more than the technology. You need to transfer, if you want it to be successful on the long term for the corporate, you need to transfer as well a spirit, a way of working, a way to tackle problems, a methodology. So I think like really one of the benefits from these programs that we're doing is we are putting these people together, and through this methodology that we have, which is a proven methodology with like some specific tools and toolkits, we have them work on concrete problems together. And by working on those concrete problems together, what is transferred is not only the technology, but also like a new way to tackle problems and a new spirit, a new philosophy, a new way of working, which I think is most of the transfer happens, again, when you're tackling a problem together. So you have to have the right mix of people in small groups, in small teams. That's the best way to transfer the knowledge. But you also need to start by giving the basis of the theory. So this is like one of the programs that we did for for a large insurance company, we did these week-long boot camps. And during these boot camps, there were startups and people from the innovation department and other departments of this company. We started by, you know, giving like the right amount of information of theory, so human-centered design, for example, business modeling, and so on and so forth, together with them. And then they used this theory to work on specific problems together, people from the startup and people from the corporate. So it's by working together and having that basis of theory that you can actually have that transfer that happened. And it happened both ways. That's interesting as well. Like it's a transfer from the startup to the corporate, but from the corporate to the startup as well.
Uh-huh, because one the nice things is to do this bootcamp. And then what's happening after the bootcamp is a more critical point.
It is.
So how you manage this after the bootcamp.
Yeah. So what we set up after the bootcamp, so they make really a very large leap forward as a joint team, right? These corporate and the startup, they form like a joint team, let's say of five people. Mm-hmm. And they make a huge leap forward using the toolkit, right? Further defining what is the plan, how they're going to find out from customers, for example, and what is their first sketch of their business model, things like that. And then they're going to work around 8 weeks together, and we are going to be accompanying them. So we are going to be their coach, their mentor, checking in with them regularly to make sure that they continue focusing on finding first the insight before starting to build something, and to make sure they understand the different tools that we have provided to them and provide them with any help they might need. Because not everybody is very good, for example, at doing a user interview, so we can help them with that.
Yeah, so this, I think, is like we are going to the question I wanted to ask about how do you find success when working together in a project in this collaboration mode with different partners? Because you combine people from different departments in corporate environment with the startups and you. So as a part of this ecosystem partnership collaboration. So how you manage this? Or what are the key success factors to get a very good collaboration?
I think, again, no silver bullets. There's some things that you can do. The first thing which is very important is you need to pick the right people. If you don't have the right people in the room, the collaboration will not work. So here you have a bit of a catch-22, which is, unfortunately, what happens in the corporate is that they want to keep their best people to do the business as usual. So you will always have this fight and this tension for the corporate to be able to release the right people, people who have the right mindset, who know enough but also are open enough to really create value in that working environment. So find the right mix of people is the first thing that you need to do, very important. Then you need to foster an environment of trust and of confidence within that group. But here I think there is also a balance to strike, because what you've been hearing in the past, which is like this idea of there's no wrong answer and like everything can be said, is true, but it doesn't mean that you need to completely suppress the spirit of being able to critique and construct on the basis of what people said. So I think you need to strike that balance of it's fine to express your opinions, but it's also fine to critique and to build on what others have said. So culture is important as well. Another thing that is important, I think, is you need to, and we mentioned it in the previous question, but you need to work on something very concrete. I think it's, from my experience at least, if you work on theoretical problems or on scenarios or on something that is not really linked to people's real business problems and strategic problems, they will not learn as much and they will not be involved as much. So this idea of defining the right problem to work on is also key. So right people, right mindset, and right problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. I think you answered the question about the insights and working together and bringing value to the company. So how did it happen to be the founder of a startup bootcamp here in Barcelona.
Yeah, so that was about 5 years ago now. We started seeing that more and more innovation was shifting from innovation projects at large companies towards startups creating innovation, and then some form of collaboration between the startup and the large company, may it be just acquisition, may it be creating these products together like we're talking about before, or may it be large companies trying to pretend to be a startup, right? Which is not possible. But we felt that if that is what's happening, rather than waiting that to happen to us, who were, you know, the running these innovation projects for our large company clients, we rather be leading that change and leading the change in the right way. So that's why that was one fundamental reason why we wanted to work with startups. The other one was that our work is very rich in terms of insights, in terms of understanding how the world is changing, how it creates new opportunities. And part of that work can be made public because it's not part of depending on the kind of project that we do, the insights that come out of the work can be made public, which is the agreement with our clients. So if those insights are public and they're so rich and they point to opportunities, and if it's so hard for companies to bring those insights all the way to the market, we need to find other routes to market for the insight, okay? Because I've often likened the route to market for a big company to bring insights to ideas all the way to the market is like trying to press a uncooked potato through a sieve. Have you ever tried that at home?
No.
you have to press really, really hard. And the only way it works is probably by breaking the sieve. So just imagine what that means to corporate innovation. So because of that, we said we need to find easier ways. Maybe we need to boil the potato first, and then we can press it through the sieve, right? So that's why we were saying, okay, let's try find ways to enable startups to be more successful. Because like we're saying before, only 0.2% of startups are successful. And this is because most startups have no idea what they're doing, right? They are not solving a problem worth solving. They're creating solutions looking for a problem. And of course, that is because they don't have much orientation and either much focus or much resources to really understand how the world is changing. So they really need those insights. So we ran an experiment, and we ran an experiment with a startup here in Barcelona called Denubi. And we were working with them and really validated this idea that we can provide a lot of value in the inception stage of a startup. But then, of course, we need to also do that in an economical, viable way, right? So that's why we are looking for a model where we can work with high quality startups, multiple startups at the same time. So that's why we said, okay, let's do research of the startup ecosystem. Let's understand all the different players like investors, angel investors, universities, accelerators, incubators, and let's see what's happening and see where we can provide more value. That is when we landed on the idea the accelerator model is the best model to create value for startups. And we set up some collaborations with a few accelerators in Europe. And again, we confirmed we can provide a lot of value to startups through accelerators. But in this case, we cannot extract the value because the accelerators don't have money to pay, right? So that's why we said, okay, this really means that we need to create our own accelerator and really design the program to be what we believe is best in class. So that's why we went to look when we had the big question, like, do we create our own accelerator or do we partner with one of the most successful models out there? So we looked at Techstars, we looked at 500 startups and Startup Bootcamp, which are, you know, one of the three top global accelerators around the world, and landed really that Startup Bootcamp was the right model for us, both because they were very strong already in Europe, but also because of their partnership model, which really enabled us to create the program that we believed was going to provide most value to the startups and therefore to our investors.
Your model, yeah, okay. That's a very nice story, because it's a very insight-driven willingness to create new startups to the market and to create an impact to the
society. That's right, yes.
Which is at the end why we're doing innovation.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Yeah, we like to say insight-driven innovation for a better world.
So you have a great experience working with startups, bring ideas to life. At Claro, you are looking for partners to work on projects to bring right value to the company needs. So how are you envision the collaborations between businesses, startups, and professors from university?
Yes. So I think that that there's a lot of value in combining business and startups, like we're saying before, like the best of both worlds, right? The idea of the agility of a startup with the relations and the potentially rigorous process that a large company can follow in terms of being insight-driven. And then in terms of professors or the wider, let's say, academic community or even expert community, we work a lot with them because one thing is understanding how the world is changing from a consumer point of view through ethnographic research. The other part is understanding from an expert point of view from people who have been studying a certain space for a very long time. And so that's why we work a lot with experts, with maybe from the academic world or outside, and who are thought leaders in their specific fields. So the way the way we work with them and the way we bring them into our relationships with our businesses and startups. Let me give you one example. So we're talking again about this insurance company in Australia, right? Where we were running this bootcamp about networked business models. So we said, you know, let's bring one of our trusted experts on networked business models into that conversation. So we brought Rachel Botsman, who's the author of Collaborative Consumption, which is really one of the first people who identified the advent of the sharing economy. And we have been working with her since the very early days, before she even wrote her book.
Very nice example. So how, like, you are working with these partners and getting all the insights. So how the future will look like in 10 years from your perspective?
I think it's a very tough question. So here's one thing. We do not want to be futurists in the sense that we do not want to make wild guesses as to what will the world be in 10 years. I think there's like some trends that we're starting to see, and I feel comfortable speaking about them because they come from rigorous research. So some of the things that we're seeing is it will be a world of more complexity, in the sense that I think businesses and people will need to partner more in order to be able to create unique value propositions. So this idea of a world where you had clearly identified who was your competitor, who was your supplier, who was your client, is completely being blurred. So you will need to know that sometimes you will partner with someone, sometimes that same company, same entity will be your competitor, sometimes it will be your partner. So it will be more complex for sure. It will also be a world, I think, where people as individuals will have more ability to play and to create value. So it will be a world where I think there will be less people who are working for one single company and more people that would be somehow freelancing and working for different companies, being experts in their field. I think it would also be a world where the whole notion of I even want to say space and time will be shifting. So this is like more like related to mobility, but the fact that moving from A to B will become a lot more convenient, will allow people to spread around a bit more and to be a bit less, I would say, constrained to live in some specific areas around big cities. So I think people will have more choices in that sense. So we'll definitely be a world of more choices, a world of less concentration. And I think it will be a world where people also have more time. It will be a world where like a lot of tasks that people, you know, don't like to do will be automatized one way or another. So people will have more time. And I think the big question, the million-dollar question is, what will people do with that time? And I think this is where we, as an innovation company, need to step in and need to find already new ways for people to be able to create and for people to be able to create new value for them and for society with that time, rather than just use that time in a more passive and unproductive way.
Yeah. So the way we look at the future is by trying to understand what is emerging, because what is emerging today will become the future of tomorrow. And so we are therefore always very strongly sensing what kind of weak signals we can pick up on terms of what is emerging. So it might be emergent consumer behavior. So if we want to understand what the consumer of the future would look like, we're literally going to talk to the consumer of the future, which are the digital natives. Growing up now, have always been surrounded by technology, because what has really radically changed is that technology is now, new services are now being adopted from the younger generations to the older. In the past, it was the wise man or woman of the elderly who were recommending things to the younger generations, and now this has shifted completely. So if we want to understand the emergent future, we need to look at those digital natives, but not just any digital natives. We actually need to look at those digital natives that have already maybe started to adopt some of those new services. So we look at, maybe you're talking about 1% of the society. We're looking at their behaviors and therefore trying to understand where things are going. Same thing with emergent business models, right? Like when we deeply described the sharing economy and showed how Airbnb was at the center of that. That was 2 years before the term sharing economy even existed. And everybody was, our clients were quite skeptical about that when we first talked to them about that, and that these new models of value exchange were emerging. But by showing how Airbnb, which at that time had only 20,000 visitors to the website, not even users, by showing that they were at the center of this massive change of new business models of value exchange, we were able to eventually persuade our client that this was a change, and this was real, and this was creating a whole new economy, which was later called sharing economy, which we actually believe is not such a good name, because it's not only about sharing. Another sort of emergent future that we really strongly believe in, and both Cyril and I are very passionate about this, is the idea of digital selves. The idea that in the future, each and every one of us will have multiple digital selves. And these digital selves, you can see them a bit like avatars that gain agency. So they are understanding, they're learning from who we are. Of course, these are AI driven, and they're learning from who we are, how we think, what is our preferences. And by doing so, they can start acting on our behalf. So that's the future of digital selves that we are exploring. And of course, there are already early signals of services that are pointing in that direction.
Well, yeah, I think when I am asking this question, always the answer is like, very difficult, I don't know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like the point about sensing these weak signals around you. And maybe before Claro Partners exist, it was these kind of gurus who had this special sense of what is happening around them, and they were able to predict the future because they were able to sense.
Yeah.
But you are more in the science point of sensing.
It's true. Exactly. Yes, it's true.
The method to the madness.
Yeah.
Yes, we can teach people to do this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, that's right.
So now I have more quick questions about super quick, about personal questions. So what is your favorite place for holidays?
Oh, my favorite place for holidays would be a place I've never been before.
That's a beautiful answer. I think that would be mine as well. And if I look at places that I've been in the past, I like the Himalayas. I like to go and do hiking there.
Yeah. And I'm really curious, since I just moved to Canada, I'm really curious about the far north of Canada, you know, where the Inuit live and where there's always snow. I'm really curious about that.
The other quick question is, how do your mornings look like?
My morning. So I wake up at 6:30 and hopefully the whole house is still sleeping. Usually it is. And so I'm making myself a coffee, and I know that this makes a bit of noise, so some people might start waking up. I love to think about what I'm going to do for that day with my cup of coffee. Really look forward to the different meetings that I have that day. And then around 9 is when I start doing my first calls with Europe, because I live in Canada now. And so, of course, I have a lot of calls with Europe, both with European clients and, of course, our Barcelona office. So my morning is usually taken up by these calls with Europe. And in the afternoon is when I would work more with the North American clients and the team that we have in Toronto.
My mornings, so I wake up with my wife. She's a kindergarten teacher, so she has to wake up pretty early. So we wake up usually by 6:45, so a little bit later than Aldo. Then we'll usually have like a little bit of a breakfast together, but very, very light, usually like a tea. And then she has to leave pretty quickly because she has to go to school. But I stay at home a little bit, and this is the time that I have to do a little bit of reading. Sometimes, when I try to do it at night, I will always have something coming in between. You know, so I really try to keep at least 30 minutes every morning to read a book. And so I do that, and then I shower and everything, and then would come to the office. And then the morning at the office is often quite different because. Since we don't have the time difference with Aldo, the calls with North America will happen more in the afternoon. So in the morning, usually either calls with clients here in Europe. Sometimes we do have calls with clients that are living either in Asia or in Oceania, in Australia, and we do those calls. But really, it's every morning is different once I'm at the office.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing with your spare time or in the weekend?
I love sailing. I make sure to go sailing at least once per year with my best friends on the Costa Brava. And also I love going to the wilderness, hiking or wild camping, things like that. I love that. And my kids are getting into it as well. So that's what I love to do.
Yeah, I think we're very similar in that sense. I really love as well to be out of the city. I love hiking, and then I don't sail, but what I do is dive. So I often would go and do diving. I'm going to do that.
Very nice. So thank you very much for this beautiful podcast and for your answers and insights. Thank you. Enjoy the summer.
Yeah.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You. Thank you.
Thank
Dara.
You for your time.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. As usual, you can find a sum up of this podcast with pictures and interviews at noco.net. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our account is noco platform. See you next month.